Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. How's it going this morning, Scott?
It goes. It's been a busy week. I don't know if you got caught up in any of that ransomware stuff, but it's been a little bit crazy. So I work for a shipping company, and one of our competitors happened to be in the news a lot because they basically went back to pen and paper or pencil and paper for a good portion of their business this week.
Oh my.
Which I am glad we did not have to do.
Yeah, I've avoided the ransomware thing. So it hasn't been too crazy of a week for me.
Well, that's always good. We're keeping some extra Bitcoin in your wallet.
Yeah, exactly. And we have I don't know what it is. Some people have like a 4-day weekend, some have like 2 days, and then they're back for a day where they won't do any work. And then, yeah, it'll be a crazy weekend next few days. Hopefully you can relax a little bit.
Yeah, I think we'll all get there. What else has been going on?
What else? So we have news. It's the end of the month, end of June. So we figured, hey, let's go back and recap some of the news, what's happened in Office 365 land over the last month.
Cool. Let's go ahead and get into this. Where do you want to start?
How about Teams? I like Microsoft Teams. Can I start there?
You can start with Teams, sure. And this is an interesting update.
Yeah, it is. So typically, Teams has been all SharePoint Online, and you've had the add-ins that you can connect to other services, but all those files in SharePoint Online, all stored in the SharePoint site collection associated with the team. Well, now Teams has gone out and released this ability to connect other third-party cloud storage options to your team to store files in. So I think there's four of them out there. There's Dropbox, Google Drive, Box, and ShareFile, I believe, are the four cloud storage services that you can now integrate with Teams. So if you really like Teams, but maybe you're still a SharePoint hater, you can go connect to these other services and use those for your file storage in Teams. On the flip side, if you are using SharePoint and you want to, you're doing regulatory things, you're like, wait a minute, I can't have my users storing files out in Dropbox and Google Drive and Box and ShareFile. I need to make sure they all stay in SharePoint. Fortunately, at the same time they released this option, or maybe even a day or two before, based on what I was seeing, you can go into Central Admin, or not Central Admin, but your admin portal in Office 365, and actually turn off this ability to sync with one or to add one or all of those teams. So it's just your typical kind of toggle switches in Office 365 admin where you say, oh, turn off Dropbox, turn off ShareFile, turn off Box, turn off Google Drive. So they did give you some admin controls around it.
Interesting. So have you had a chance to play with this yet?
I did. I went into one of my teams and added it.
So if you, I guess functionally, how does this work? So if I go into a team and I say my storage provider, can I do multiple storage providers? So SharePoint and Box?
Yeah, you can do multiple storage providers, and you can even do... So Dropbox obviously doesn't have the whole concept of sites and site collections. It's all folder-based. So you can actually go into a team and add, or even a channel, and add additional cloud storage providers to that team or channel. And even within Dropbox, you could select multiple folders for that channel, and it essentially shows up as a folder underneath your Files tab with little icons to show what storage provider those files are coming from.
Cool. And how does it look from the user side when you upload it? Do you choose your storage provider, or is it just based on kind of your tab? And you've said, hey, I'm already in this area, so very intentional, or do you have to make some choices along the way?
You'll have to make some choices, because again, it almost just shows up as another folder within Files. So it's not necessarily setting like a default storage provider for that channel. It's just giving you additional folders and additional options to upload it, save, store files in.
Cool. And can I shut off SharePoint storage and do like exclusively Box or Dropbox? Or do I always have to kind of play with that duality of I'll always have SharePoint and this other thing?
Everything I've seen, you're going to have to play with the duality. I haven't seen any options yet to actually shut off SharePoint and just use something else.
Very interesting. I think that'll make a lot of organizations happy, and it'll make some others freaked out. And then some others will come along and say, well, I don't want to turn it off for my whole tenant. I only want to turn it off for this thing. And that level's not going to be there for them. So
yeah, I had one company already. They're like, whoa, that's coming out. Go make sure we turn it off right away. Because again, they're doing a lot of the records management, records retention, lifecycle management, all in SharePoint for all their files. And they're like, we can't have all these files spread out across these different areas. We need them all in SharePoint for all the records retention stuff.
Yeah. Another good reason to keep on top of your message center and watch all this stuff coming through.
Yeah, exactly. And one other one around Teams, this one, I don't think I even put anything out there in the notes, but I know a lot of people have also been excited about external access, being able to invite people from outside your organization to join your team. Originally, there was an announcement that, hey, this will be there by the end of June. It's the end of June. I saw about 2 or 3 days ago, they updated the user voice item in there. They ran into some issues, and they say it's going to be sometime in the future. So no set time frame yet on that. They didn't go into details around issues or how long they might think it's going to take. But if you were waiting for external access to your Teams, sorry, you're not going to get it this month. Who knows? It'll be a month, 2 months, 3 months, but they're still working on it.
Keep waiting. There's still Slack for you. That one's really hard because, you know, everybody's pining for external access and some of these new features. So, you know, Teams, recently GA, like the new shiny, let's get people in there. External access is still pretty messed up in some of the underlying membership mechanisms, right? Like groups in general. So I still don't have a great way to bring external users into shared inboxes and conversation streams. There's no way to do Planner with them. There's barely a way to do the SharePoint site because SharePoint with external access gets really wonky really quick when you start doing the individual permissions thing. And it'd be nice to see them have a more cohesive story there. Maybe they all need to sit in a room and talk.
Yeah, I agree. I had a client, we ended up with like 10 or 15 users that were still working through the ticket with Microsoft where they were internal users that got invited as external users and used their corporate email address when they were invited as external users. So they're actually like guest users, but they're synced with Azure AD via Azure AD Connect. So they're like half guest users, half internal users. And AD and SharePoint and everything just got all confused about these users and if they're internal or external or synced with AD or not. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite ones that we run into a lot working with external entities who aren't always computer savvy, right? Because not everybody understands login flows and the difference in identity between Azure Active Directory and Microsoft accounts and consumer identity, things like that, is you will send an invite to an external user at address A, right? You'd be like user A@gmail.com. And when they go and click the link to sign in, they're already signed into their Microsoft account, which was like fluffybunnies36@outlook.com. So then they get really confused because it says, hey, access denied to Fluffy Bunnies. And somebody reaches out and, you know, they'll open a ticket with their help desk or whatever. And they'll say, I tried to share this with marketing@contoso.com. And when they sign in, it says they're Fluffy Bunnies. It's like, well, yeah, you're going to have to share it with Fluffy Bunnies. Sorry. It's just a really weird thing. So, you know, I almost wish they had a feature that said, hey, this was shared explicitly with marketing@contoso.com. I see you're trying to sign in as Fluffy Bunny. Would you rather create a new account for this other thing that you were actually shared with rather than popping up this weird, nasty error message?
Yeah, I agree. But just like that, we digress into identity again. So yeah. What else is there in the news?
There's a couple of things around the SharePoint side. So you have some new SharePoint Online filter panes being released to modern lists and libraries. So now you almost have this. The way I've experienced it, it seems to be a little bit of like a persistent view for just having the filter always up in those modern lists or libraries. So it's no more go and hover or mouse over the column that you want to take and resize or do anything to. It's just kind of always there and hanging out and ready for you.
Yeah, I've played with this in a little bit. I also kind of compared it to like the refiners in search where you just kind of, that panel slides out. You can just kind of click and pick and choose and refine down what you want displayed in that view.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It can be a little big sometimes, depending on your screen resolution and what you've got going on and that whole responsive design thing that they're doing on that end. But, you know, it's another welcome addition. It certainly surfaces things up a little bit better than views used to do. So, you know, views tended to always be kind of hidden in the classic interface. And I don't know that people always understand what they are anyway, even in the modern one. Trying to find a little drop down in the upper right corner and saying, hey, am I going to be in a list, a tile, and then, you know, what's my filter and everything there. So having that filter pane just slide out like that, load really quick, check, 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 and oh, good, I'm down to my options.
Yeah, it's nice. I like what they're doing with it. So speaking of lists and libraries, Microsoft made a change with one of the column types in SharePoint lists and libraries this last month and kind of surprised a lot of people because there was no notice. All of a sudden it was like, hey, we're turning this off today.
Never happens.
Yeah, no. They always give you plenty of warning. And that was custom markup scripts are now disabled in calculated fields in SharePoint. So this is an interesting one. I know a lot of people used calculated fields to, in my opinion, sound kind of some cool hacks around lists and libraries to do some formatting things, some color things. And you could do that by adding some of that script actually in a calculated field. Microsoft decided all of a sudden, hey, this is a security hole. We need to patch it. So starting today, we're going to disable markup scripts in calculated fields. I saw a bunch of people complaining because, of course, there were a fair amount of things that just broke when Microsoft disabled that without any warning. It looks like if you are using them and you still want to use them for a little longer, you can actually open a ticket and Microsoft will re-enable them for your tenant. But if not, they're going to be disabled by default. They're not going to turn them on. And even if you re-enable them for your tenant, I think it's only for like another month or two, maybe three, so that you can figure out a new solution to whatever you were using that custom markup script for. And then it's going to be completely off all the time. You're out of luck.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting one. It's going to be tough. I think, you know, features like that, I used to use the heck out of that stuff back in SharePoint 2007 and even the transition into 2010 before you had native functionality like JS Link available on a page. So, you know, you used to be able to do these HTML calculated fields and you could do like full-on KPIs and have like graphics show up in a column or highlight a column, you know, red, green, yellow, that kind of stuff. Just functionality that wasn't there on the SharePoint side. So I can certainly understand why they're doing it. It's a little just inconsistent in delivery for some of this stuff. So shutting off this feature on that side, and I don't know if you saw this one. So one of the things with modern team sites is, and particularly team sites associated with the group template, they don't allow for things like custom script, right? So there's a no script setting inside of those sites. And the PMP team came back and they said, hey, we're going to allow you to set no script now. So you'll be able to go ahead and have those customizations. And sure, we think that's going to be a supported activity. So, you know, one hand is going this way and the other hand's going this way. And really, you just want them to be like coming together and maybe like clapping a little bit. And they're on opposite ends giving each other the finger.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
But it is what it is. One of the really cool things about some of the new SharePoint stuff, not to like bash on all of it, communication sites have hit their rollout phase. So those are coming out. They were announced back at the virtual summit. They are available today. If you've got your tenant configured just the right way and you've sacrificed two chickens and a goat, no kittens for this one, and they will be completing their rollout by the end of August is their current target.
Yeah, I have not sacrificed my goat yet, so I don't have it.
So there is a trick to this, and a couple people have written about it. I saw Mark Anderson and Dan Holm, one of the product marketing managers, was out there talking about it as well. So usually when they do these things, they release them to tenants and, you know, their waves and all those things, but they will do something like enable it for first release tenants first, and then they'll come into first release for select users, and then they'll start their rollouts into regular tenants and things like that. This one's interesting in that it came to first release for select users first. So if you have a tenant where you have gone in and said, I want this to be a first release kind of bleeding edge tenant, actually not going to get this bleeding edge tenant. You need to flip a user over into first release for select users and go ahead and add that person there. And as long as you have one person in there, they'll get access to a communication site, or really they'll get access to the new section layouts and web parts and things like that. And then they can go ahead and spin those sites up and regular users can come in and take a look at them.
Yeah, I might have to go flip myself over. I'm a tenant of like two or three. So I just have first release turned on for the tenant. I don't have any user first release. So
yeah, it has to be user first release for this one. But like I said, the really cool thing is once you do that, you gain access to not just communication sites, but also some of the new web parts and text features. So those multi-column layouts, the section layouts, you'll start to see those appear in your modern pages, just over in your regular SharePoint sites too. So if you have like existing team sites, modern UI, modern pages, things like that, you will gain access to those features and functionality over there. So all of the communication sites they announced so far are the ones that are out there. So they have a couple of templates. They have three templates: topic, showcase, and blank. And then they talked about having the actual custom templates and things like that come a little bit later this year.
All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to playing with them. I really like the multi-column sections, that stuff too. So
yeah, I know we went ahead and I tried to get some of our marketing and kind of corporate communication teams out there, created them a couple sites based on the templates and said, go have a play with this and see what's going to happen. You know, if these work for some of the other customizations you've been making and you want to be a little bit more modern and fresh and integrate with the rest of the UI and this is going to work, let's start going down that path and see what we can make happen. So I think it'll be really fun times for that stuff.
Sounds good. All right. So I'm going to jump out of SharePoint for a little bit. We still have more SharePoint news. Apparently it was a big SharePoint news month, but there's a new feature available for enterprise tenants that has been available for some other tenants for quite a while now. Microsoft Forms, the preview finally came to enterprise tenants. I think education is the one that's had this for a while now. And before everybody gets all excited and says, yay, we finally have an InfoPath replacement. No, this isn't an InfoPath replacement. If you haven't paid attention to what's going on in the education space, what Microsoft Forms is this is a service that can be used for creating polls, surveys, quizzes, almost more of those questionnaire type forms. So not rich InfoPath type forms where you can go out and create all these nice fancy paperless type electronic forms. It's a questionnaire type. So it came to education first because again, they used them a lot for schools, for quizzes, surveys, tests, if schools wanted to try that. But hey, now if you are an enterprise and you want to create some polls, some surveys for your employees, get some employee feedback, go give Forms a try, give that preview a try. You should have it now in any of your enterprise tenants. I think it's there for E1 through E5.
So this is exactly the opposite of the communication site as far as turning it on for the thing we just talked about. So where communication site was first released for select users only, Forms preview is available for only full first release tenants. So where you don't see communication sites in yours, but I see it in mine. I don't see Forms in mine, but you do. All nice and backwards.
Yeah, like we said, everybody's pointing the same direction, crystal clear as mud.
Just to kind of harp on something you said too. So you said Forms is not a replacement for InfoPath because there isn't one. So Microsoft and the Power Apps team have been pretty explicit that Power Apps is actually going to be the replacement for a couple products. It's going to be the replacement for Access Web Apps and also the replacement for InfoPath. It's not going to be a full featured replacement. It's probably not going to have a migration path. It's going to be really janky and hard to get to and all that good kind of stuff. But it's time for folks to get over it. It's Power Apps.
Yeah, I heard, I can't remember if it was Dan Holm talking on another podcast the other day. It was somebody from Microsoft that was talking about this. And they said they're actually trying to be really careful in their verbiage. And they're not calling Power Apps the replacement for InfoPath because they don't want people to get the idea that, like you said, there is a migration path or it's a replacement. They're calling it the successor to InfoPath.
So somebody should have told that to the product marketing manager for Power Apps and Flow, Chris McNulty, who came out in the Q&A in the virtual summit. He actually said it like directly in the Q&A to that summit that, yep, Power Apps is the replacement. Full on 100%. So again, it's another one of those left hand, right hand things. You know, I tend to be pragmatic about that stuff, right? Like Microsoft has not always offered clean migration paths for things. You just need to resign yourself to the fact now that your migration path for InfoPath to anything else, realistically, because there's really nothing else like InfoPath out there, there's kind of things, is going to be two monitors and side by side and just replicating a bunch of features, hopefully. So there's your migration path.
Yeah. All right.
Free advice. What else do we got going on? I think there was some Intune stuff as well this month, right?
Yeah. There's some new Intune conditional access policies that are available. Again, goes into the new admin experience in the Azure portal. There's some stuff around, it looks like MFA, prompting users to enroll. We'll put a link to this blog post out in the show notes. But there is some new conditional access policies that are available for Intune now. Again, it's in the new Intune portal in Azure. I believe there was also one around Android devices. They updated the company portal app for Android. So they've modified the whole MDM enrollment button in Android, gave this app an update, was based on some customer feedback. Customers weren't happy with how it all was, so they gave him an update.
Yeah, I think that was an interesting one. So I don't know if you've ever played around with, I think we talked about MAM without enrollment and pushing that through. So the way MAM without enrollment works is you're not supposed to have to enroll your device, right? Makes sense. So in Android land, the way that used to work is you would come in and you would get the company app and it would actually tell you that you have to enroll your device. And you would go through a kind of quasi-enrollment all to get just access to company-managed applications. And now you don't need to do that anymore, which is awesome because now it simplifies the flow, makes it a little bit more like the iOS experience. I wish it was fully like the iOS experience where I didn't ever need to use the company app without MAMWE. Because on iOS, I don't need the company app. I just open up Outlook and it says, hey, your company's got a policy that protects this and pushes it through. There must be some weird underlying difference in the platform, but helpful, super helpful on the user side to get all that stuff going.
Yeah, that'll make it really nice. There was also a new feature around Exchange Online. A new PowerShell commandlet was added. So with Exchange Online, you obviously have your resources so you can create conference rooms. There's an equipment resource. So just like on-prem, if you need to book, if you add a resource and you want to book a conference room, you can include this resource on the email invite, books the room, works great. Just like resources in Exchange on-prem. However, there was an issue where if a user left, was let go, their mailbox was disabled, you would essentially end up with these orphaned events on these resource calendars. And because this user was the one that created the event, there really wasn't any way to get rid of them. There is now, or at least an easy way to get rid of them, there's now a remove calendar events commandlet that you can run, and it will go through and automatically cancel any future meetings organized by that specific mailbox. So when a user leaves, you can go in, run this commandlet, it'll remove all of the meetings they scheduled out in the future that may be tying up one of those resources in your Exchange Online environment.
Yeah, if you're an Exchange admin, this is great. Like now, because in the past, you would have to go in, grant yourself access to the mailbox, go ahead, open the shared mailbox, find the item, delete it, and whatever. So now it's just, you can incorporate this straight into your offboarding procedures once that commandlet's available within your tenant and pulled down, because it is one of those gradual rollout things, you would just be able to automate that on the way out the door if you wanted to.
Yeah. All right. What else do we have here? Another new service. Do you want to talk about this one? I think you've played with this one a little bit more than I have. Visio. Visio has typically only been a desktop app. What's coming with Visio Online, Visio in the browser?
So they announced Visio Online a little while ago in kind of preview form, and they had some beta apps so you could get involved with like Test Flight on iOS and things like that. So if you want to participate in those things. But Visio Online is going to be just like some of the other Office Online features. You'll be able to create Visio diagrams in a web browser. It's an all new UI for things. It's also going to include a Visio viewer. So, you know, they've had some of that stuff in place and things like OneDrive for Business for a little bit now. So it's all set and ready to go. The preview for Visio Online is available to first release customers who go ahead and sign up, and limited MUI, a couple other things. It's kind of out there and ready to go. We sent a couple users to the Data Insight Summit in Seattle a couple weeks ago. They had announced some things for like Visio and Power BI integrations and things. And they all came back from that and they said, hey, how do I get this Visio thing? Well, turns out you don't get it for free, right? You need to have a Visio license. And the same thing applies here. So you're going to need to have that Visio for Office 365 Pro license. Go ahead and turn that up. And then users are just up and running. There is no separate entitlement for Visio Online versus Visio on the desktop side. So it's looking at just that one entitlement. So if I'm entitled to Visio on the desktop, I will be entitled to Visio Online, have access to do all the kind of light editing and things like that that can happen in a web browser.
All right. I'm kind of looking forward to that one. Unfortunately, I'm on a Mac, so I don't have the Visio Pro Plus license because it doesn't do me any good. Now I may have to go get one of those so I can play with this in the browser, see if it works all right, if I want to start doing that.
Yeah, I participated in the test flight betas for Visio on iOS. So I've been using it on my iPad for a couple months now. And it is like, it's really good. It's actually kind of awesome to be able to do some of that stuff on the go now. So even though you're on the Mac side, I know you've got some other iOS devices as well. So you might be able to apply that license in other ways.
Yeah, I'll have to go check it out. One other one, maybe we can sneak two in here. Retirementofdocs.com. I know both you and I have used this to put up different presentations we've done. This was a Microsoft service. It was part of Office 365 that essentially allowed you to store your PowerPoint presentations online, share them with others. We used it for a couple of user groups we run. We've used it for ourselves for some of the presentations we've given. That is going away. December 15 of this year.
So yes, it is.
They are providing a migration path for this one. It's to OneDrive. Yeah, sort of. It's to OneDrive. So you can migrate your files from docs.com to OneDrive, but the replacement for docs.com is SlideShare. So now that Microsoft has acquired LinkedIn, owns SlideShare, they're like, we don't need docs.com and SlideShare. SlideShare is the replacement, but your migration path is to OneDrive. Again, it is what it is, but if you have stuff out in docs.com, make sure you migrate them to OneDrive to save them, or if you want to keep sharing them publicly, go download them, put them over on SlideShare.
Yeah, I did this the other day. I don't know if you've done it yet. It's a pretty straightforward migration path. You literally click a button and it says, I'm going to make your doc stuff read-only for a little while I move it over to your OneDrive. It moves everything over to OneDrive into a new set of folders. You end up with like this public private folder set, depending on what you had going on, quick little Excel sheet of all the stuff it moved, and then you're just kind of off and up and running. So long term, you know, if anybody did have docs.com stuff, go ahead and do your migration now. And what it'll do is start redirecting those things to OneDrive today for you. Make them all nice, ready, pretty, available, all that good stuff.
All right. And do you want to hit this last one before we wrap it up? I think we got time for this one. The default sharing settings for site collections connected to groups. It's changing.
Yay.
Yeah. So I can talk about it. You can talk about it. Apparently, it used to be allow sharing with external users. It was set by default to be allow sharing with external users that are already in your organization's directory for groups. Again, Microsoft received a bunch of feedback. General consensus was people wanted it set so that external sharing is now set to allow sharing with authenticated external users.
Which makes a little bit more sense, right? Makes it a little bit more like that OneDrive-ish model, which people are used to. I just want to go in and type in an email address. I think one of the interesting things was there were some throwbacks in there. So the reason they probably had this set is you couldn't do things like there was all sorts of weirdness that would happen when you had like a mail-enabled contact who was synced into your directory and you tried to invite them to a group and it would blow up and I can't do that and give you a funky error message and some other things. So now they allow things like mail-enabled contacts. It's a lot easier to bring people into the directories. And in general, this is just kind of that steady march of groups, right? So the NoScript stuff, things like this, just make it easier to consume and continue to push out.
Yeah. All right. I think that wraps it up for the day. Hopefully we were able to keep this under 30 minutes. If not, we're really close.
If not, we'll just edit part and chop it off.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
All right.
Thanks, Ben.
Yep. Thank you, Scott. And we will talk to you next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.